I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of The BIP Show is brought to you by Brookside Energy. Brookside Energy, one of the most exciting oil and gas companies listed on the ASX, is about to capitalize on record high oil and gas prices. With an existing solid production base and the first of over 20 planned new wells nearing production, Brookside Energy is about to join the ranks of top-tier Australian oil and gas producers. Brookside Energy, working with local communities to ensure sustainable growth and value creation through the safe and efficient development of energy assets. And now, on with the show.
How are you now? You're listening to The BIP Show. BIP is for business, investing and policy. And that's what we're here to talk about. Don't forget to hit subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. I am not Paul Colgan. I'm James Whelan, investment manager at VFS Group. Paul Colgan is on the line, but is just doing the production work today. Paul, if you want to say g'day now. Otherwise, just sit quietly in the background.
Oh, but, g'day, James. How are you?
How are you now, Paul?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
So anytime you want to chip in, mate, just feel free to do so. Otherwise, I've got the controls, and you just look quietly out the window. If I need you, I'll let you know, okay?
You got it.
Okay, mate. Now, today, it's all about black gold, Texas tea, oil. Where is it? How much longer do we need to get it out of the ground? How much is it costing us to do, and how much do we need to make to sell the stuff? So one of the good things about having a sponsor, it means that we actually get to keep doing what we're doing. But one of the great things about having a sponsor like Brookside Energy is that it means that that we can actually have a subject matter expert on and tell us about what's going on in the oil. So this special edition, which is presented by Brookside, means that we get to have a guest today, an actual real oil guy, which is good. So the legitimacy that we get from this is sensational. Our guest today, David Prentice, is Senior Resources Executive, 25 plus years domestic and international experience, started working in commercial and business development roles within resources sector. During the last 12 years, David has gained international oil and gas exploration and production sector experience, working in both executive and non-executive director roles with Australian publicly traded companies. David is the Managing Director of Brookside Energy Limited, Chairman of Norinex Limited, and Chairman and CEO of Black Mesa Production LLC, and Non-Executive Director of Comet Resources Limited. David, thank you for joining us today. How are you now?
G'day, James. Yeah, nice to be here. And, big shout-out to all of my friends and colleagues there in New South Wales that are obviously doing it pretty tough with the lockdowns at the moment. So our thoughts over here in the West are with you guys.
Yeah, that's awfully good of you, David. Thank you so much for that. And I can tell you that one of the big misses every year that I have planned to go to Diggers and Dealers over in Kalgoorlie, or at least get over to Perth and have a bit of a catch up with people that I want, something always gets in the way and managed to get in the way again this year. How was the week that was for Diggers on a cut down sort of area around over in the WA region?
Yeah, look, I think they had a pretty good, a decent number of delegates, despite the fact that no one from the Eastern Seaboard could make it. I think certainly the atmosphere was buoyant, and we took the opportunity to have a little bit of a sidebar lunch event where there was sort of six or seven companies presenting, and we got a bunch of people to come along to that, and it was a chance for us to tell our story. And I'm pleased to say I'm back safely in Perth now, and my liver is intact.
That's the tough role of being the boss of a company that's pretty popular, and everyone wants to talk to you when everything's going well, and it does seem like things are going well. We'll get into the drill down later, but let's talk a bit of shop to start off with. Recently, the Financial Times had a pretty big commodities forum, and I've got a section that came out of the commodities forum with regards to oil and where they see the price of crude or Brent going. And so we've got Jeff Curry from Goldman Sachs. It was a huge proponent of oil's rally last decade. This is a quote, has argued that commodities are looking at a new super cycle as government stimulus measures boost demand. So this is about a month or two ago. He believes oil demand will rise because policymakers will use spending on huge green infrastructure projects as stimulus measures aimed at tackling inequality. We argue that every $2 trillion of green capex spend is worth about 200,000 barrels per day of oil demand. David, let's talk about where you sort of see the price of oil and what you see as driving it. I'm just sort of going to open it up to you as being one of the guys who's on the coal face or the oil face, I suppose you want to call it. Where do you see the drivers for the oil price, and where do you actually see the price going short and midterm?
Yeah, so look, I think the narrative there is sort of around, you know, decades of underinvestment, and people probably don't appreciate that we've had a long, several decades of underinvestment in these large scale, discoveries. So it's becoming more and more difficult for the non-OPEC producers to replace the reserves that they produce every year. And up until really, I guess, the end of 2014, that was largely being masked by the fabulous run-up in production from the shale patch in the lower 48. So, you saw this massive investment. There was a lot of capital went into the ground that perhaps shouldn't have, and so you saw this massive investment in the shales and production rose as a result of that, and that sort of masked this underinvestment in these large-scale long lead time projects that the world actually needs. And what's the net effect of that is really two things. One is that the tier one acreage in the US got high graded quite quickly, and it's becoming more and more difficult to find those tier one areas that produce the kind of returns that investors are looking for, and it's probably resulted in OPEC essentially becoming the swing producer. So they're the guys who are looking for achieving that Goldilocks pricing. So the question is in the short term, what price do they need? What price are they looking for? And what's their ability to expand their production to meet that growing demand that you touched on? The other thing is that certainly the capital in the US that was driving that boom in the shales, up until the end of 2014 was really looking, at growth as the key driver rather than, return on investment. And that's, done a complete flip. And so you're seeing a lot more capital discipline now coming out of the US operators that have survived the downturn, and people are looking to funnily enough, resources businesses are whether it's hard rock or oil and gas, often get get drawn into this concept of growth at all costs, and the market goes through various stages where growth gets rewarded ahead of the actual fundamentals of the business. So I think in the oil patch at the moment, we're going through a phase where capital discipline and returns to shareholders are at the forefront, and that's going to mean that the production growth out of the US is going to be muted, and therefore we're going to see prices stabilize around these levels, I think, and then potentially move a lot higher when it becomes clear that there's going to be a gap between supply and demand.
Yeah, and I think that what we've seen as well, so if we take what happened to Exxon and Chevron towards the end of May, just with the shareholder defeats that they had. So was it Engine? Remember the Engine Number One, that small hedge fund that put a couple of board seats on for Exxon, and is sort of trying as hard as they, well, not trying as hard as they can, but definitely sort of trying to steer it in the direction of being more, I'm going to say, greener. And so they've got this bigger focus on their carbon capture.
Yeah.
So that was Exxon, and then Chevron has had some defeats on some of the bits and pieces that they've done, and doing a big push into carbon capture as well. Well,
yep.
I am seeing from the investor side of things as well that the big companies that you'd want to be drilling and going and finding more oil and getting as much out of the ground, they're now not really allowed to have that as being their big focus. I think I'm just pretty much just repackaging what you've said there. So it's they're drilling for oil isn't the biggest focus now for companies that drill for oil. This is going to sound ridiculous. And so with the idea that, okay, we want you to spend that money on us and actually pay it back to investors means that, that you've got some pretty big cash cows in the oil companies. And if you want to make some pretty chunky yield, then the big oil players are most probably the way to get it for now. And also yes. with a bit of an ESG spin.
Yep.
Which I'm pretty keen on. Where are we going to now after that? So look, OPEC, how much do you think that OPEC, I mean, with the negotiations that happened with the UAE wanting to be able to have a bigger baseline with potentially the Iranian deal, do you think that OPEC, what do you see the direction of them being for, to push the oil price? What do you actually think that their end game is, or where do you think that they want it to be? Do the Saudis want $100 oil?
No, I don't think they do. But I think you know that certainly in the short term they've probably got some catching up to do in terms of you know strengthening their national balance sheet. You know they so the notion that that they would be happy for the prices to be higher for longer you know is probably you know is probably fair. You know, keeping in mind that you know high you know sort of oil prices you know in the hundreds are not really good for anybody you know for the global economy or you know anybody really. I mean, you start to impact on demand and inflation and all sorts of things start to unravel. So I think you know certainly from our point of view, and I guess I always go back to the pretty selfish kind of view on, you know, what's good for Brookside and you know, 75 to 85 is, you know, we you know, keeping in mind that, you know, the metrics for the Swiss acreage is, you know, sort of 80-odd% rate of return and at $60 and $3 gas. And we're currently sitting at about $70 and $4 gas. So, you know, this is all kind of cream for us around these levels, and I think probably the same can be said for OPEC, to be honest.
Yeah, that's good enough there. So now let's drill down into actual Oklahoma and into actual territory. So walk us through the Anadarko Basin. It's been a thing since about the 20s, I think, that's here. And what's the interesting area with that? What's the big take on that one?
Yeah, so I think you've got the you know the coming together of all the key ingredients in the Anadarko Basin, you know, that really set it apart from other basins in the US and certainly you know other basins around the world. And you know the key things that I always focus on, obviously the rock has to be good. You know we need to have the reservoir qualities there that drive these high rates of return. And, you know, when you look at that, you convince yourself that you have those reservoir properties, you need data. And you know, because the Anadarko Basin's been the subject of so much exploration and development over 100 years, we've got reams and reams and reams and reams of data that tells us about the rock quality. So we sort of know where to start looking, and we know what the rock's what the properties are and what the reservoir's capable of delivering. So that's obviously a big tick, which then enables us to sort of effectively use that data to prospect up and down the basin margin, looking for these kind of core of the core sweet spots where you're going to get, you know, where the wells are going to outperform. So that's, we've spent a lot of time doing that. What came with all of that development over those, you know, over those, that sort of long period of time was a bunch of infrastructure. So there's enormous amount of takeaway capacity in the basin. There's lots of pipelines, lots of refining capacity. And so it's really a great place for, you know, what we would describe as sort of boutique oil and gas businesses looking for, you know, to generate sort of, you know, great returns out of these sweet spots. You've got all that takeaway capacity. So you measure your time from drilling the well to first production in you know, weeks and months rather than years if you're developing something in Alaska or off the coast of Mauritania or something. So fantastic infrastructure. And then probably the last thing, which is not to be overlooked, is the workforce. You know, you've got this fantastic workforce in Oklahoma. You know, probably every family in Oklahoma, whether they're farmers or whether they live in the large regional towns or in the cities, every family would have somebody somewhere in their family that works in the oil patch and has done, you know, for multi generations. And so the I guess the smarts that come from that, and the ingenuity and the ability to adapt is sort of world class, and so you combine that with their with the fantastic equipment that they operate, and you start to see why these areas are so successful and why they outperform their peers around the world.
Yeah. Okay. So now I do the same thing. If we had Martin Whetton on, I'm going to ask you about the actual operations of how the actual bond market works. We had Tolga on last week, and I actually asked you about physically how he picks the things that he picks. And now we've got the guy who's right down. You mentioned, I'm going to ask you about the details and actually what these things look like. What are you looking for in the rocks? You mentioned the rock samples and everything. Because I mean, myself as an investor, I see it on the outside and I look at the fundamentals and there's bits and pieces, but drilling right down into the actual samples and what there is not something that I've really had to do for a long time. Do you want to just run us through what physically you're looking for in this area and what makes your eyes light up?
Yeah, sure. So if you think about, it would be handy if we whack a little map up now, but if you think about the basin margin, you know, 250 odd miles of a sort of a basin margin that runs from essentially the northwest of Oklahoma down just south of Oklahoma City, then all the way down to the Texas border in the south, south and east. And as you progress sort of further to the from up off that shelf, if you like, towards Oklahoma City, the two primary targets that we're chasing, which is the Sycamore Lime and the Woodford Shale, start to get shallower, and in those areas you're in what's called the black oil window, and you know that's a good place to be if you want to, you know, if you're looking at just producing oil. But the problem with that is that those areas tend to be what's called under pressured, so you need to pump those wells with some sort of artificial lift, and you don't have a lot of energy in the reservoir, so you're producing oil but you've got to have some sort of artificial lift to get the oil out. As you go deeper down sort of moving away towards the west, you start to get into what we call the gas condensate or oil gas condensate window. So now you're a little bit deeper. The reservoir is either normally pressured or slightly overpressured, and you're using those gas molecules to help lift the oil to the surface. And in the really best parts of the basin margin, and particularly where we are in Southern Scoop, that gas comes with some natural gas liquids as well, which you know the price of natural gas liquids has been on the tear recently as well. So you've got the double benefit of having three production streams, and you're, you know, without sort of getting too much into the science of it, you can imagine once you open up the formation to the atmosphere, those gas molecules want the pressure wants to normalize effectively. So those gas molecules expand, and there's your lift, if you like, for driving the oil and the hydrocarbons out of the reservoir. So okay. That's the sweet spot. If you keep going further to the west, you get into the deep gas, and that's dry gas, so no natural gas liquids. So you get fantastic wells that are that are comparable in terms of their flow rates with some of the best wells in the Perth Basin, as an example. But it's dry gas, so you're stuck with, you know, the pricing, you know, that you don't get the benefit of those extra revenue streams.
Okay. So I'm now looking at, let's actually look at what you've got here. So I'm looking at the dual well, and just a note to anyone, I'm going to put it's publicly available information, the presentation that's just been released. Yeah. Has got some details on the dual well, so I'm going to put that on the website. Anyone who wants to know more about it, I'm just looking at the dual. So do you want us run us through the dual well operation that's there, and how far along that's come, based on what it was you just went through?
Yeah, sure. So I guess, you know, that in terms of the acreage itself that we've acquired in that Southern Scoop Swish area, you know, that we used all of those prospecting techniques to essentially, you know, identify what we felt like were the absolute sweet spots within the sweet spot, if you like, so the core of the core. And in the case of the dual location, we had a lot of good data from vertical wells that were drilled in the area, so we could already measure the size of the container, if you like. We already knew how much oil and gas was located in both the Sycamore and the Woodford. We could measure that and quantify it. And then so effectively what we're then doing is really using modern horizontal drilling and completion techniques to more efficiently get that oil and gas out of the rock. So, you know, over the last several weeks, we've gone ahead and drilled that horizontal well. You know, we obviously lots of you know, almost weekly updates to the market as we've sort of successfully got that part of the operations underway. So drilled the well. As you would expect, we saw, you know, fantastic shows of oil and gas on drilling. So, you know, as we were bringing the rock chips in the drilling mud back to surface, we saw, you know, oil and gas in the samples. We saw, you know, plenty of all the things you'd expect to see if you're drilling an oil and gas well. You know, we saw some gas kicks. We saw oil in the cuttings. So all those things are very, very positive. And then we once the well's then drilled and the lateral portions drilled out across the location, the next probably most difficult part of the operations is to run in the production casing and cement that in place, and we successfully completed that part of the job. And then in the last couple of weeks, we've been doing what we call pre-completion operations. So that's setting the wellhead and the Christmas tree ready for the completion guys to come in. We had to build
The
Christmas tree, yes. And we're now, you know, again, you know, touching on that point that I made earlier about the fact that we have all this abundant infrastructure. So, you know, we go ahead and put the production facilities on the surface location. So we put in the tanks, we put in the separators, we run a line into a sales line. So all this stuff is quite different to what a typical E&P company would do if they were drilling in some remote location and they were exploring rather than exploiting, because they wouldn't build all that equipment, because they would really be testing the well to see whether it was capable of producing commercial quantities of oil and gas. So we don't do that. We know it's going to produce commercial quantities of oil and gas, and so we put in all the production infrastructure. We tap into the sales gas line, and now you know we're set to do the final part of the process, which is complete the well for production.
Oh, outstanding! Now that's okay. So that's underway, which is great. Now recently, so we're recording this on the 5th of August 2021. Brookside Energy, and usually here is where I would read the ad for Brookside Energy. I'm just going to skip that today because we are talking about the company pretty extensively. But the you've just done a capital raise, and so the stock is technically in a hold at the moment, and we will be back out of a hold tomorrow, which should be means that people who are listening to this means that the stock is out of a hold. So do you want to run us through the capital raise? What's it? How much is it? What's it for? What's it at? And what's it going to be used for? Because for me, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's absolutely super, super exciting for us. I mean, I guess, you know, we on the back of the success of the drilling of the Jewel well and I guess, you know, what's generally happening in that Southern Scoop area, you know, we've got a bit of a tiger by the tail here. And, you know, this is really just the beginning, you know, from Brookside's point of view. And some of your listeners will have seen in the last week or so, we announced that we'd managed to pick up some additional acreage in Swish adjacent to our Rangers DSU. And so, you know, this capital raising is really about, you know, maintaining and increasing our operational momentum and being able to take advantage of the service company windows, you know, secure the rigs and line all of those service companies up ready so that we can move straight from the Jewel onto the Rangers. So that's really fundamentally what the capital raising was all about. The response to the capital raising was overwhelming. I mean, we were very, very positive. You know, we closed the book, you know, very, very quickly, with multiples of the maximum that we were looking to raise, with multiples of that covered, and pleasingly from, you know, a mix of existing shareholders and some new sort of larger shareholders. So really, really, really pleased. It looks like we're going to raise, you know, the maximum, which was $9 million under that capital raising, will comfortably cover that off. And and you know, it will put that money to work. And you know, I guess larger working interests, you know, in the wells that we're drilling, you know, going forward, including the Range as well, which is a next cab off the rank. And you know, larger working interest and faster momentum. So in other words, you know, doing things quicker, you know, translates into more cash flow and more cash flow more rapidly. So you know, very exciting for us, and we're absolutely delighted to have been able to get this raising done so quickly and with such a great response.
Yeah, it was done quite quickly. I barely had a chance to look at it before it was snatched away from me. So And obviously, I mean, full disclosure, I do hold the stock as well. So it's, otherwise, I wouldn't really be talking to you just quietly. But do you want to run us through Ranges? So if Jewel has X, then how much do you think or know that Ranges has got under the ground there?
Yeah. So look, the Ranges, you know, I guess the reserve potential and the production outcomes and all of those are very, very similar to the Jewel. If you think about this in a geographic context, you know, I think the Ranges location is about 3.5 miles south and west of the Jewel location, and it's in an area where it's, you know, again surrounded by some of our neighbours, you know, Continental Resources, Citizen, Marathon, some of these large publicly traded E&P companies have all got wells very, very close to where the Ranges is that are doing particularly well. In fact, some of the best wells in this whole part of the play have been drilled in that area between the Jewel and the Ranges. So super excited about that. We're the next steps on Ranges are to obviously sign the master services agreement with Latshaw, so the drilling company that we were so delighted with their performance on the Jewel that we want to continue to use those. And that was a big driver of the timing of this capital raise, was just to make sure that we could lock them in before they went off and started drilling for one of our one of our neighbours, I guess. And then, you know, we lose that drilling window and lose a bit of momentum. So we're going to be able to sign that master services agreement with them now and lock that away. Then we'll start building the pad and get ready to just continue on with our development program. So very exciting, and we'll move straight back into drilling mode here in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, okay, brilliant. And so then that goes on to sort of the next question of what's the mid and long term focus for Brookside. So if we're talking, you know, a couple of years from now, what's the play on that one?
So look, I think we really, really try and stay true to this three pillar model that we've developed, which is really kind of, you know, I guess has been inspired by what the private equity guys have done so successfully over there in the US for many, many years. And that is, you know, always being able to have that mix of development drilling going on, good solid cash flow base, but always be alive to opportunities to monetize your acreage position if there is an opportunity to do that, or pick acreage up if there's an opportunity to do that. So we'll be doing all of those things. I mean, we'll follow the Ranges well in terms of actual operations on the ground. We'll follow the Ranges well with the Flames well, which is the next DSU in our development program. And then once those three have been drilled, that effectively holds our acreage position by production, which is sort of a technical term for meaning it moves from being leasehold to being, you know, in production and held in perpetuity. And then once that happens, you know, strong cash flow base, and then we've got a sort of a 20-well, 5-year development program that we can look to unfold. And we can choose to, do all of that. We can choose to do part of that. We can bring a partner in. We can, you know, choose to monetize some acreage. We can choose to expand our acreage position. So all these things become possibilities for us in 2022 and beyond.
Okay, well, that's a pretty good overview. We've covered the raise. We've talked about what's happening with Ranges. We've talked long-term with what's happening with Brookside. I'm pretty positive on that one. We've also talked about what's happened with OPEC and the oil price in general and where the future is for that one. We've also talked about how physically that this oil and gas gets out of the ground. So if there's anything else you'd like to cover...
So I do have a question for you, David. What is a Christmas tree?
Yeah.
So it's an assembly of valves, effectively, that enable you to pump the completion fluid into the well when you're doing the actual completion operation. So, it essentially enables you to control the flow of fluid in and out of the wellbore with a series of valves, so that if you need to stop fluid coming out of the wellbore for any reason, so in a situation where you might be concerned about a blowout, then you're able to do that. But you can also pump fluid in there at a very high rate to get this completion away. So it's a really interesting bit of kit.
I assume it looks like a Christmas tree, right?
It does. Yeah, that's right. It's a pretty large bit of kit that sits on top of the wellhead.
So just one last thing. You were talking about the deposits, right? So you've got oil, LNG, and then gaseous gas, right? So gaseous gas.
Yep.
So just describe the cavity to me. So in a typical deposit, what proportion of it, how big do they tend to be? What proportion of it will be oil and then mixes of gases?
Yeah, so in terms of the revenue stream, just because of the pricing differential between the three things, it's obviously heavily skewed in terms of revenue, heavily skewed towards oil. In terms of volumes, it's about a third, a third, a third in terms of the actual volumes. Is that where you were sort of headed with that question?
Yeah.
And in terms of the actual quantities that we're going to recover from this well, we're talking sort of in excess of 1.5 million barrels of oil equivalent, a third of which will be oil, and a bit more than a third will be oil, and then a third will be natural gas, and the balance will be dry gas.
Yeah, and what kind of pressure is the gas under?
That's probably above my pay grade.
details. Yeah.
consult with John Schumer, but. Okay. Suffice to say that these wells are, we saw gas kicks during the drilling process, so the gas is under pressure, and that's a key part of why we choose these bits of acreage, because as you can imagine, it's a bit like when you open your bottle of tonic for your gin and tonic, you watch those bubbles making their way towards the opening and getting bigger as they come towards the surface, and that's the same process is happening with these wells.
Yeah, right, got it. Well, that's fantastic. James, do you want to wrap it up?
I will do so. Thank you for that, Paul. Brookside Energy, one of the most exciting sustainable growth oil and gas companies, listed on the ASX for investors wanting exposure to rising oil and gas prices. Stock code BRK. That's the official ad. David, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for the sponsorship as well. A great partnership.
Absolutely delighted to be with you guys, and enjoyed it immensely.
Thanks very much. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. Rate us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. Just a note that this is general advice only. The information and advice contained within may not be suitable for you. And I'm also, full disclosure, that I do hold Brookside, and my clients do as well. You can find us on iTunes at The BIP Show, and we're on Twitter. It's at @the_BIP_show, and we're on Facebook too. Just search The BIP Show. I've got a website, Wheel and Capital, which has got a link to the BIP Show. We've got a little section in there, which is great. So get in there and have a look. I'm going to put the presentation onto the website so you can follow along while you're listening to it, to what it was we were talking about it, and learn a little bit about how these things actually work. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate, entertain, and I think that we managed to definitely educate some more on exactly how these things get out of the ground, which is so important to the way that the world keeps on moving around. Have a look for Wheel and Capital. Follow the links to the BIP Show individually on Twitter at Colgo, at James Whelan 42. Ken Vexler couldn't join us today. He's on the Twitter as well, if he lets you see what he's up to. Don't forget to hit subscribe and rate the show. We love those 5-star ratings. Please keep them coming. That's been fantastic so far. This show is produced by Rick Salter, and we will catch you next time Thank you for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.